Blog Talk Radio.
You have tuned in to the Brain Injury Radio Network with shows 7 nights a week. You can find the network at braininjuryradio.com or look up Brain Injury Radio Network on Facebook.
Another Fork in the Road with your host, Donna O'Donnell Fugerski.
Hi, and welcome to the Brain Injury Radio Network on blogtalkradio.com. My name is Donna O'Donnell Fugerski, and I am your host on my show, Another Fork in the Road. My show airs on the first and third Sunday of every month at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time. So you need only do your time conversions across the United States and across the world, frankly, to be able to tune in live. I know for some of you that might be in the middle of the night, you know, mid-morning. So that might be a little bit difficult, but, you know, give it a try. So anyway, another fork in the road is for anyone with a brain injury, anyone who is caring for a brain-injured person, or anyone with any interest in learning more about brain injury. Brain injury is not discriminating. It can happen to anyone, anytime, and anywhere. And folks, it does. The Brain Trauma Foundation states that there are more than 5 million people in the United States alone living with some form of brain injury. But most folks do not even know about brain injury. And I know I never did. Not until it came to live on my doorstep. On another fork in the road, I tried to raise awareness of brain injury and to help folks to understand what survivors and caregivers experience. On the third Sunday of each month, I interview brain injury survivors or caregivers to see how they traverse their world of brain injury. I host therapists, medical professionals, and authors to gain insight into what they offer survivors. And on each first Sunday of the month, I host a panel discussion to examine pertinent topics related to brain injury, such as depression, neural fatigue, anger, or any of the various symptoms of brain injury. For those who are new to my show, here's a snippet about me. I came on the brain injury scene in 2005. When my husband David had a brain injury. And you can learn more about that on my blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. And this is the part of the show where I always remember to tell you, have a pencil and paper nearby, because I will throw out some URLs that you might want to check and look into later on after the show. I often pass off some interesting information that you might want to just, and I'll take a peruse of later. So that, again, is survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. All one word, all lowercase. I shared David's and my story in 4 episodes on this very show when I started it in 2014. That was August of 14. The last of which in November of 2014 featured a discussion with David also. I also interviewed David on my April 19, 2020 show for his perspective on his brain injury after, at that time, it was 15 years. Now, of course, we're already 18 years past. And I also wanted to get his input as a retired professor of microbiology for his understanding of the COVID-19 pandemic, which we were all engulfed in at that time. So you can find my archived shows on my blog, again, that is survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. Just click the on the show, nope, sorry about that, on the air Show Menu tab under the Category section on the right sidebar, and it's really, really easy. Or if you want to know more about David, just type his last name, F-I-G-U-R, in the search box on the right sidebar to learn more. And, of course, you can use that search box for anything. So if there's a topic you're interested in, neuro fatigue, depression, any of those that I mentioned above, or anything else, it's probably there. Put it in the search box, and it'll probably come up. And you can also read our complete story in my book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale, which was published by Right Life Publishing, and it was released in November of 2018. You can find Prisoners, as I fondly call it, as a print book, as an ebook, and as an audiobook. And I am actually the reader for the audiobook, so I was really very fortunate to be able to do that that job. You can find it at all your local book cons or your local library. And if for some reason they don't have it, then ask for it. They can order it for you. So please do that, especially in your libraries, because it's always fun to have that book there for other people to stumble upon. And you sometimes need it when you don't even know you need it. So when you read it, please write a review on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Goodreads, because a review is a book's best friend. It helps to let others know about a good read. So go to my website, DonnaFigurski.com. That's DonnaFigurski.com to learn more about me. There's all kinds of stuff on that website, including all about my book, a page with a cast of characters. So when, as you're reading the book, you can take a peek and see what the person actually looks like in real life. And I hope tonight that you're going to find my show fun and informative. And I also hope that you'll visit the shows of other hosts on the Brain Injury Radio. There are shows every night between 7 and 10 p.m. Pacific Time. And you can also tune in at 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time on weekends to listen to your favorite shows, too. Brain Injury Radio broadcasts across the United States and in 36 countries. Of course, if you have internet, you can always tune in at any time and pick up one of the podcasts, because the live broadcasts do turn into podcasts that are archived, and you can listen to at any time from any one of the hosts, not only mine, but every one of the hosts. So now, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. So tonight, as I said, is the third Sunday, and I do host a panel, a guest. And tonight's guest is Bob Millsap. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about Bob in just a second. But first off, I just want to say, into everyone's life comes some pain. It's inevitable. We know it will happen probably more than once or twice, but we never seem to know when or why, what it will be, or how the habits will appear. So it's nearly impossible to plan for the pain and the calamities of life. We just kind of have to roll with those punches and figure out how to move through it. So tonight's guest, Bob Millsap, learned that lesson the hard way at a very young age. In his book, Shake Yourself Free, Take Control of Your Life to Move Through the Pain, Bob writes about how he lost his fiance, who was killed in a car accident, how he lost his prestigious job as a grocer manager, and how he almost lost his wife when a bottle of soda exploded and hit her in the head, causing her a traumatic brain injury. Any one of those events could send anyone over the edge and make them bitter and angry. That he was bitter, he was angry, he was confused. And it took him years to work out how to move through the pain. And tonight, Bob's here with me to talk about how he did it and how you can too. But first, let me share a bit of background on Bob. Because Bob has been a panelist. He's been a guest on my show since, oh my goodness, I'm thinking back to 2017, 2018. Bob's been around and hanging out. Was it 16?
Yeah, it was when Shelley and I first were on.
Wow, even longer than I thought. But so Bob's been around, and he did his own show with his wife, with me, Shelley. And so that was back in 2016, so that's a long time ago. And since then, Bob has been a regular panelist on the show, offering his good advice, his suggestions, his knowledge about being a caregiver for a survivor of brain injury. So Bob Millsap became a caregiver for his wife, Shelley, when a freak accident occurred in their kitchen, proving that brain injuries can happen anywhere and to anyone and at any time. And when I do talks out in the public, I always talk about Bob's situation because it really was a freak accident. Shelley was in the wrong place when a bottle of homemade soda sitting on her counter exploded. I mean, you're in your own home. You don't expect to have a calamity such as that happen to you. But the explosion knocked Shelley unconscious for about 20 minutes. With much difficulty, Shelley made her way to an urgent care facility in blizzard-like conditions. I remember she told me she had to just scrape a tiny little hole, space, I guess I should say, in the windshield so that she could see out as she was driving herself to the urgent care, which was about a mile away, but extremely treacherous conditions. She was in a remote area of Idaho, and since then, Shelley now lives with what we call an invisible brain injury. Well, it's invisible to onlookers, but it's not invisible to Shelley. Her husband, Bob, stepped up to be an amazing caregiver for his wife, and I know that because Bob and Shelley and my husband, David, and I became friends after learning that we live in the same part of the desert. And frankly, we live within 5 miles of each other in the desert now, so that's, like, really cool. But Bob and his wife, Shelley, were guests on my show. Yes, it was 16. I even have notes here for that. Were guests on my show when they discussed Shelley's brain injury and Bob's role as Shelley's caregiver. So if you'd like to hear their complete story after this show, you can go to my blog. Again, it's called SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury.com. And on the right sidebar, click on the air show menu, and then scroll down a long, 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 long way to October 16 of 2016. So, yeah, I did have that down there in my notes. And you can hear the show Meet the Millsaps. You can also type Bob and Shelley's names, or Bob or Shelley's name, in the search box to read their interviews and caregivers and survivors speak out. And that's Millsap as in M-I-L-L-S-A-P in the search box. That will get you to anything that either Bob and Shelley has done on the web. Bob also writes a blog called 10,000 Days, and you can check it out at 10,000days.blog. And he's also the author of his new book, Shake Yourself Free, Take Control of Your Life to Move Through the Pain. So now I want to welcome back to Bob. I'm glad to have you back, Bob. And a great,
thanks
big, huge
me
congratulations. Oh, you're welcome. And I want to give you a great, big, huge congratulations on the publication of your first book. And I'm going to say that title
Thank
again.
You.
Shake Yourself Free, Take Care of Your Life to Move Through the Pain. Bob and I were talking right before the show. And, at first, I was wondering what this title meant, and we're going to talk about that more later, and how I was going to be able to relate it to brain injury. But you're going to see very clearly that the things, the experiences that Bob went through can be, but they overlap in the survivor world, in the caregiver world of brain injury. And he's going to give you some good points, I think, here. So, Bob, before we begin to chat about your book, I know I told the audience a little bit about Shelley's accident, but can you fill in our audience how you came to be the caregiver for your wife who has a traumatic brain injury?
Yeah, as you were saying, we had moved up to Jackson Hole, Wyoming area. I was working in Jackson, and we were living in Teton Valley, Idaho. Very remote, very cold, complete opposite of.
Yeah.
We were in Phoenix area for 13 years before we went up there, and I go over a lot of this in the book and how and why we moved up there. And anyway, so Shelley was bored out of her mind up there. You know, it's very remote. You know, an hour from the closest Walmart and hour and a half from the closest mall, and just really, you know, really a remote lifestyle compared to what we were used to in the Phoenix area. So she started her baking business back up. She had a baking business here in Phoenix before we moved. And so she started that up, baking gluten-free goodies and cakes and cookies and really started getting a following, started doing a lot of private orders. And then I was running a high-volume natural food store over in Jackson called the Jackson Hole Grocer. And so Shelley was baking for the store, so she'd bake it, and I'd take it with me in the morning and gave her great real estate. And she was just really – things were starting to click again, and she was, you know, finding a purpose up there, and things were – we were getting money saved up, and things were really moving right along. And her and my sons had made some homemade ginger ale, lemon, water, sugar, yeast. I think that's the only that's the only ingredients. They'd made it, put it in used, you know, empty 2-liter bottles, 3 or 4 bottles they made, and kids drank some of it. Then there was a bottle that was left in the refrigerator. She took it out, said, "Hey, is anybody going to drink this?" And everybody said no. So she set it on the counter. Well, she was busy. I was working like crazy, you know, 12 plus hours a day, and she was working. Going to a commercial kitchen, really had a lot of orders going on. So she sat on the counter and didn't think about it for several days. And she just happened to be walking past it one morning. And it fermented, so it was cold in the refrigerator, got warm, fermented, turned to a bomb. The force went through the nozzle of the bottle. So the bottle didn't even break. It was just that force through the nozzle caused an explosion, knocked her unconscious. We figure about 20 minutes. She came to, called me, trying to explain what, and I was like, "What in the world are you talking about?" I mean, because this is the furthest thing you can imagine. And so I thought she was at the commercial kitchen. She was at home about to go to the commercial kitchen. So anyway, I got that all out of her. She sent me a picture of her face that was just completely swollen and black and blue, just very swollen. So I thought, okay, I'm going to get somebody to get you to the urgent care. We lived in a small town, Victor, Idaho, didn't even have a stoplight at that time. The county seat was up about 7-8 miles, Driggs, Idaho, and it had one stoplight. That was it. And that's where the hospital was. So there was a satellite urgent care in our small town. So anyway, she couldn't get anybody. You know, I always say that I should have called an ambulance, you know, but you don't, when something like this happens, you don't always make the best, quickest decisions. And so anyway, she got herself out to the car. It was 10 below zero that day.
My memory said
it was 10 below zero. And so when I was writing my book, I thought, I'm going to make sure, see what the temperature actually was that day. And I looked it up, and sure enough, it was January 2013, and it was 10 below zero. So she had to scrape the ice off. She got herself to the hospital, to the urgent care. They were like, "What in the world is going on here? Has she been, you know, a victim of domestic violence?" You know, there were so many questions because her story just didn't make any sense. So finally they got it figured out that it was legit. Called me. I was already on my way over the pass, the Teton Pass, which is treacherous, very treacherous in January, and was moving my way over. Well, in the meantime, they were concerned that her eye socket was damaged, that her nose was damaged. It was so small town that the nurse put her in her personal car and drove her up to the hospital. And so I drove to the hospital, met her there, and she had a CT scan, MRI. She was very black and blue, and she had a broken nose. But it took, you know, I get into this a lot in the book, but it took weeks before we discovered that it was a brain injury. And she, so at first those symptoms weren't showing, but then she got to the point where she couldn't walk or talk and had to, you know, it was just really got bad there. And so yeah. I became, you know, her caregiver and had to do all kinds of things that, you know, since I'd always worked like crazy and she was a stay-at-home mom, you know, my role expanded in their way and the kids' roles expanded. And we just really have had quite a journey and a positive journey to get through that and get to this point. And she still has issues, has made huge strides and worked so hard at making strides, but still has a lot of PTSD. And, you know, we had a couple weeks ago for 4th of July, we left on the 3rd and drove to Williams, Arizona, which is a little small Route 66, yeah, cute little town up in the mountains where they don't have fireworks, and stayed in a hotel for a couple of days. And you know, we do that type stuff to get her away from the things that really cause the trauma to her PTSD. And, yeah, you know, it's been 10 years now. And So I wrote a book about my journey that leads to that, and that really was a shift for me as far as myself not feeling sorry for myself anymore, and going more towards a life of gratitude and kindness rather than, you know, anger and bitterness and victimhood, which is so easy. I'm a victim when things happen. I lost my fiance when I was 23 years old.
Yeah, I'm going to stop you right there because I want to pull something that you said here back. Because you mentioned that it took you weeks to find out that Shelley had a brain injury, that it wasn't apparent, the doctors didn't realize that it right away. And I think that's a really good point for people to understand that it isn't always diagnosed immediately, and that either, you know, despite the fact that, okay, you were in a car, you had a whiplash, you had an accident that you were tossed around a little bit, but walked away, you know, that kind of stuff. Or even if you did have to go to an emergency room, you were released in some period of time. You can't just give up and say, nothing happened. You have to be aware because brain injury can creep up on you. Things might be happening in your brain that you're not aware of yet, and that they do manifest themselves sometime later. And that's what you were saying, Bob, that happened with Shelley, that, okay, yeah, it was obvious that she had a broken nose and she was banged up because of this incident.
Yeah.
But and people can look at that and say, okay, but there are other things that were happening to her later on, like you mentioned the PTSD, because that can come back at you just as the troops in the Afghanistan and Iraq wars came back, and they were back and walking and they were in their normal lives. But when something like a firecracker or a loud backfire on a car or a gunshot or any kind of thing like that goes, that can bring that PTSD right up to the forefront and cause trauma. It can cause you to be scared out of your mind. I know that even a bang on a kitchen sink sometimes can do something like that, a crash of dishes or something, and people jump and get panicky. You know, and those are the kinds of things. That's just one example of something that can occur after you know, you've had an incident that may not even be labeled brain injury at that time. So the point I'm trying to make is that pay attention if you've had an incident with your head at any time, if you've been in an accident, if you've taken a fall, if you've hit your head somehow, be aware. You may not have to see the stars and have a concussion to have something. It could creep up on you later on. And, so pay attention and take notice of it and get help. Get some care on that. So, yeah. So Bob, now the moment we've been waiting for, let's talk about your book. I remember It was just a gleam in your mind. And I think it was back in that, I think it was around 2018. Boy, am I gone.
2018, that's absolutely right.
Was that it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you and I were driving across Phoenix. We were driving across Phoenix. We were going to the Brain Injury Alliance of Arizona, their all-day conference, which is a fantastic conference for anybody in the Phoenix area. They held it every May, I think it is.
Yeah, May.
Yeah. And it's a great conference, and it's free. And if you can go, because it's just amazing all the information you get there and the products that they provide for you. But at that time, we were just driving across town, and you told me that you wanted to write a book about Shelley's experience.
Right.
And I had just, we had been talking about my book because it was a new publication. It came out in November of 18. So I don't know if maybe my new line was coming out.
I think
out.
You
That's
weren't, yeah, your book yeah. Might not have even been out yet when we started talking about it.
Yeah. No, it wasn't. It wasn't out then. I'm trying to put the dates together now because if we went in my book didn't come out till November. But it was under contract and coming out. So we were chatting about my book and everything. And then you made this comment saying that you wanted to write a book about your experience with Shelley's brain injury. And I remember encouraging you. I wasn't sure that you would really tackle the job because a lot of folks, when they hear that I've written a book, tell me that they want to write a book too, but very few follow through. And actually, I think you're the first one that I know that actually did follow through and do this job. And for that, I'm so proud of you. But
Thanks.
I was truly honored. You're welcome. Truly honored when you called to talk about the writing process with me or how to go about finding a publisher or any other publishing-related topic we would chat about, because I can talk writing all day. It's definitely one of my major passions. And there is a quote that I keep on my desk, and it's called, "Writing is hard work." And not many folks understand that quote. How many times have you heard someone say, and I bet you have too already now, "I could have written that"? That's truly a compliment to the author. Because obviously their writing was so clear, it was so concise and easy to read, that it made the process look simple. So no wonder I'm hearing all the time, "Well, I want to write a book. I'm going to write a book." People don't get it. Bob, you and I realize that, and any other author out there actually too, knows that in order to hold that published baby, that published book in your hands, they gushed blood, sweat, and tears to make those words flow into sentences, into paragraphs, into chapters, and finally that completed book that you're holding, and you're saying, "How did I do that? How did I do that?" Bob, I guess what I want to know is, what was your driving force behind your book? What compelled you to write, take yourself free, take control of your life?
I had a big change in my way of looking at life when Shelley had her accident. And I've always been a good writer and have enjoyed writing. And I had a story that's gone viral that's really a crazy story. My 9/11 story, which you've heard. I would write that every year. That happened. I won't tell the whole story, but just I ran into my lifelong grade school best friend in New York. Total coincidence. the night of September 10th at Yankee Stadium. The game got rained out. We ended up, my coworker and I ended up going back. We had a rental car. They jumped, him and his wife jumped in our rental car. We went back to his apartment in Hoboken, New Jersey. Had a few drinks that night, turned to several drinks, talked about going to work with him that next morning because our flight was on the 11th midday, a little afternoon from LaGuardia. So we were going to go with him to his office to see, check out his view, which was the 104th floor of the World Trade Center, South Tower.
Wow.
And
yeah,
we drank. We were a little hungover, first time in our life to be hungover on a Tuesday morning while we were in our work, you know, on a work day.
Yeah.
And so anyway, he did not go to work, and the majority of people in his office were killed that day. And so it was just really quite the story. And so
yeah,
I detailed that, and every year people look forward to seeing it on Facebook. And then I had some friends tell me, man, the life you've had, you have so many more stories than just this story. And, you know, and that got me thinking. And, you know, back in 2016, the 9/11 story went viral. Mike Rowe picked it up on his podcast, and it got watched millions of times. It's an episode called, I can't think of something about Mike, which was I can't think of the name, what it was titled right now. But
uh-huh,
anyway, it was a big, big, big episode. And every 9/11, it gets seen a ton. So anyway, that got me thinking. So I thought I need to write. I always wanted to write something that would help people go and that would help young people that had lost the love of their life at a young age, would help them navigate that. Because I wanted to write, I thought it would be great to write something that could help, because there was nothing that I could not find a thing that helped me. So that was always,
yeah,
that had been in my mind. And then the 9/11 story and then Shelley's accident. So I started a blog and I started writing about all of that. And one of the first articles I wrote was about Shelley's brain injury and me becoming her caregiver. Well, that got picked up by MSN, Yahoo, really got seen by a lot of people. So that kind of catapulted me into, okay, I'm gonna try to write a book. And then I found a publisher, you know, right then in the first part of 2018, a publisher found me, really good. Mutual friend from Jackson, somebody that used to work for me at the grocery store in Jackson. She knew a guy that had a publishing company and was a motivational speaker, and the first guy, only guy to do a solo trek across Antarctica by himself, just a total survivalist polar explorer. So anyway, so she introduced us. He read my blog and he said, you know what, you do have a book here. He's like, yeah. And so from that point forward, I think it was April or May of 2018, all the way until March of 2023 when we released the book, he was patient.
Uh-huh.
He worked with me. He helped me shape it. He's like, you know, we're not going to write a memoir because nobody really cares about Bob Millsap per se. You're not a known figure. You know, you're not a celebrity. You're not somebody that people are curious about. But he said they are going to be extremely curious about what you've learned from your experiences, because your experiences have been just continue to be really teachable moments. So that's
uh-huh.
how we shaped. And I worked on it, you know, for 5 years. I worked early in the morning. I'm a grocer, you know, from way back, and always have gotten up before daylight, and I still always get up before daylight. So I'd work on that thing from, you know, 5:30 in the morning to 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning, and then I'd put it away, and then I'd do my day job, get into my day job, which at this time I was in the mortgage business, And it just really took hold, and it became something that I was really proud of, and it's unique. I think it, you know, it surprises people when they read it. Like, it probably surprised you the way it was structured and the way, how much more there is to it. It's not just a grief book. It's not just a caregiver book. It's not just a self-help book. It covers all that stuff, and it covers all kinds of different loss, from career loss to financial ruin to, you know, loss of a loved one to, you know, becoming a caregiver for your spouse to, you know, it covers mm-hmm. so much, and there's so much, so many relatable moments that people can take in their own life. And
exactly.
that's what's been fun to see is, you know, just to see people's reaction once they have read it. And then also to hear from those people that I don't know, you know, that have reached out that it's really touched in the way that purpose of it was of why I decided to do it, you know, was to help
uh-huh.
those type folks. And that's been good. So it's still a little surreal that it's out and that it's
yeah.
doing well. And it was quite a process, and I appreciate you from the very beginning, you know, talking to me, and I was, you know, a lot of people were, I'm sure, were thinking, oh yeah, whatever, you're going to write a book, sure you are, but, you know, I'm the type of guy
uh-huh.
that's a hard worker, determined, and, you know, when I set my mind to something, I
yeah.
typically see it through to fruition.
And I get that in your book, too. I get that, the motivation
yeah.
and the follow through in your
right.
book. It comes through very strongly. And, you know, once you had, you know, had decided and you told me all this stuff that you were working on it and you were diligently working each day on it, I knew it was going to happen. And I'm glad that I was able to be someone that you could look to and talk to about it, because it makes me very, very proud to, you know, to see your book here, and I'm holding it too, and I read it and I love it. So, yeah, that's really cool. But Bob, I liked your subtitle, and when I first read your title, you know, I like
yeah.
Shake Yourself Free. It doesn't really tell me what that means, but it grabs you because it's like, shake yourself free, okay? And all I ever keep thinking of is like my 5-year-olds or 6-year-olds in school. If I said, shake yourself free, they're going to stand there wiggling their shoulders and moving all about. And so that was the image I was getting all the time. And then your subtitle, take control of your life to move through the pain. Now, that again, I wasn't really sure right away until I started to read the book. And then it became very clear. And you are basically challenging folks to don't sit back. You have the control. You just have to
right.
use it. You have to learn
right.
how to use that control. And you can get through the hard parts of your life. And as I said earlier,
right.
everybody, we all have hard parts in our life. You know, I said, into everyone's life comes some pain. It's inevitable. And how true that
yeah.
is. But it's how we manage or live through the pain that's important. And in your book, you wrote about being an only child. You wrote that you had a pretty normal life with doting parents. And I've met your parents. I know they are. And you were looking forward to a promising career in the grocery business as you followed your father's
my parents, yeah, my parents owned grocery stores, and I was followed them, you know, I went into the business
yeah.
with them, and everything was going as planned, and then, you know, a shocking tragedy
yes.
happens, and, you know, it's easy.
Shortly after you graduated.
Yeah.
Yeah, can
so,
you talk about that?
What's that? Say it again.
I said that shortly after you graduated college, you had that devastating
right.
event happen to you.
Right.
It caused unbearable pain.
I had gone to college, business school at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo on the central coast of California. And at the time, you know, and I wasn't ever the greatest student. And But I was proud of myself because I went to junior college and worked like crazy and got myself the school I wanted to go to. Got in there. It was the hardest business school to get into in the state at the time, undergrad. And got in and just studied like crazy, worked like crazy while I was in school. And at the junior college, I met Dana, my girlfriend, fiance, that she was also a business major, straight A student, and she was going to go to Cal Poly and study business. So I went first. I was a year ahead of her, so I went a couple quarters sooner, and then she went, and she was a straight A student, so I studied like crazy with her. We took a lot of the same classes. I graduated I got done in March of 90, and then Dana was due to graduate in December of 90. And so I went into the family business, was running one of our supermarkets in a town called Tehachapi, California. We were living in Bakersfield, and I was living with my folks. So that fall, I started looking at houses, bought a house. Dan and I were, you know, we didn't have official date or official engagement set of when exactly we're going to get married, but we're going to get married in the next year and a half, two years, somewhere like that, something like that. Anyway, So bought a house. Dana came home that on the weekend of Veterans Day, and on Friday she was home, and I closed escrow on the house. And, you know, I'm 23 years old, bought a cool little ranch house in East Bakersfield, and so we celebrated all weekend, had a great weekend, went to a wedding, and then had things delivered for the house, and it was, life was teed up to go a certain way, and Veterans Day weekend, she didn't have class till Tuesday afternoon, so she headed back on Tuesday morning, and not far out of Bakersfield, she got killed in a car accident, and so I was devastated. I mean, just completely, yeah. And our relationship was more than, I think, the typical 23-year-old trying to find their way, 22, 23-year-old. So anyway, people didn't get it. I was working in the family business, you know, that was so much hope and promise, and I was really going to turn it into we were going to grow the business and turn it into just so much pride and joy, and I was just, you know, I was working like crazy, but my heart wasn't in it as much, and it was a really rough few years there in Bakersfield. Sold the house, stayed there with my parents, and my parents, you know, my dad is very driven, you know, old school, worked me hard, you know, I had a lot of the benefits of having the family business, but I also had to work harder than anyone else. So he was, you know, he saw what was going on with me and was concerned, and they made the sacrifice where they said, hey, you know what, we're going to sell this business. They had five stores in California at one point.
Right.
They had split up with a partner, and they had two, and he's like, we're going to sell these stores and we're going to buy stores somewhere else. So I spearheaded finding some stores outside of California, and that was, you know, I talk a lot in the book about change and how good change is, and not to be afraid of change, catalyst
right.
for a lot of good. And then in the meantime, I had, you know, a lot of my friends that I thought I could count on weren't really there for me. It was a little too heavy for a lot of them, which you can understand.
Yeah.
Well, I had this, there was this person that I'd go over and to her place, but she was Dana's best friend.
Bob, I want to hold you up right there, because we're going to get to that part of the story as we go through the day, through the interview. I have something else I want to address right here before we move on, because I think this is really important as well when it comes before that part. So I just, as a very young man, when you were grieving your loss of Dana, she was your loved one, your very best friend, and And like you said, you and Dana had plans to marry and spend the rest of your lives together. Then that awful accident happened and robbed you both of that happiness. And brain injury also has a way of robbing folks of happiness. And it, too, can cause both survivors and caregivers to wallow in grief. Grief for what they could have or should have, but there is no more of that. There, you know, that's the old life is gone. But Bob, you didn't feel that your grief was validated by other folks, and you mentioned
that I didn't.
Here just a second ago. Folks didn't understand the depth of your love for Dana and their in your relationship with her, and you heard many platitudes. And I think this is important because I think that these are the kinds of things that we as survivors or caregivers hear all the time. And I just want to throw a few of those out, the platitudes that people, they don't know how to handle it. That's basically what it is. They don't know how to handle grief. And so they'll say, well, you're young or you're strong. You have your whole life in front of you. Time will heal. Everything happens for a reason. And survivors and caregivers hear similar platitudes like things will get better or be patient. And again, that you're a strong one or God doesn't give you more than you can handle. And each of these phrases are meant to be consoling. I don't blame the people for trying because I know they don't know what to say, but they want to help you in some way. Or, you know, they're thrown in the situation, they're at the funeral or the wake or the memorial service, and or they meet you in the grocery store, and they say something. But those kinds of things are not consoling, even though they're meant to be. And the griever feels that he or she is unheard and misunderstood, that the people who are saying this don't really get it. And they don't, truly, they don't. But Bob, can you talk about grieving and how folks can help someone who has lost a loved one or a survivor who has lost a portion of his or her life? And I know there's a quote in your book. I should have written it down, but maybe you'll come up with it because I really like that particular quote. But can you talk about that?
You know, I think that, especially when you're young like I was, it's people don't know what to say. So they say the things that they've heard people say that are just those, you know, Hallmark type platitudes.
Yeah.
Instead, what people need is for people to be present and to be, you know, not have to always be talking. I think the people want to cheer someone up and they want to not mention the person that was lost because they don't want to make them sad. Well, they're thinking of that person, you know, but so, you know, come over and bring them food or say, come on, get in the car. Let's go grab something to eat or let's go have a beer but don't hide from the difficult conversation. Let the person be how they need to be at that particular day. And it was hard for me, and I found a few people that allowed me that. And one of them, you know, was Shelley, who became a friend of mine, who was, I knew Shelley because she grew up with Dana, and they were in the same large group of girls, but they weren't super tight. Right after Dana passed away, Shelley moved in with one of Dana's very best friends, which was somebody that I'd known since first grade. So I would go over to see Laura to just get out of the house after work and just, you know, be around somebody that would let me be me. And then I met Shelley and I became friends, and she would let me, you know, she'd listen to me. She felt sorry for me. And, you know, she had a boyfriend herself, you know, but we were just really good friends, and I could be myself around her, nothing romantic. And then, you know, 3 years later, after we moved to Kentucky and with the when we bought the new grocery stores, Shelly came to see me as a friend, and our relationship changed. And so that's quite a twist in the book. And that sent shockwaves back to our hometown, which created all kinds of animosity with friends and family of Dana. And that drove a lot of the bitterness and the anger for me. It drove it, you know, further. It just really added to it. So, so it's just you need to be able to be present for the person and just allow them to be them and you be yourself and not try to change the subject, not try to cheer them up. Just help them get through the day, because that's the biggest challenge in those early days is making it through and to, you know, from one day to the next. And I just have such awareness for that. And I felt like, you know, I know all this and I need to write a book. You know, those were some of those driving points that made me just, you know, where it really ate at me, where I need to write a book. And I did think of the podcast for the 9/11 story. It's Mike Rose.
Oh, okay.
You Don't Know Mike. It's called You Don't Know Mike, that episode. And it's pretty fantastic. So anyway, just thought I'd share that because I just could grab it at the time.
Yeah. And I just found the quote in your book that I wanted to cover too. You said words hurt, and I'm quoting now, if you can't think of what to say, just say simply that I have no idea what to say right now, but just know that my heart breaks for you. You know,
right.
That says it because you don't have to say you're going to be strong, you know, you're going to be stronger, or there's a reason for this. No, there isn't, you know, there isn't a reason, and you're not going to understand that there is a reason. You know,
people don't want to hear that things are going to get. They don't want to hear that things are going to get better because they're not in that phase right there.
And the same thing with brain injury survivors. Like, it'll get better. Don't worry. No, it probably isn't. You know, and you're saying it isn't going to make it any better, and it's going to actually make me a little annoyed because, or you know, what is it? Oh, a lot of people used to say to me, "Oh, you're so lucky." You know, that David lived. He had a 1 in 600 chance of living it through his first surgery, his first brain injury, surgery, and so you know, and then the very slim chances of the other two also, the other brain surgeries, and they would say, "You're so lucky," and I have to take a back. I'm taken aback by it because I say on my book trailer, luck would have been never to have a brain injury at all. I'm glad David's alive. Of course I am. But I don't think that this was lucky, you know, that we had a brain injury or that he's alive and having to live with all the devastation that a brain injury causes. Or people would say, "Oh, you've become so strong." Well, yeah, I had to pay a huge price to become that strong, you know, and that really isn't going to make me feel better. It's not say, "Oh, wow, I'm so good," you know, "Isn't that wonderful? I'm strong because I had to go through all this pain." But what you said here, and I quote again, "I have no idea what to say right now, but just know that my heart breaks for you." That lets me know that you care. Not giving me some false hope or excuses.
Right.
So I think that's a good line that many of us can take off with us to you know, use if you need it. Use that in your form of it to help other people. So the next thing I wanted to talk about, and you kind of mentioned this a little bit too. You said you work 12 hours a day, but in the months after Dana died, you said, Bob, that you plunged into work. You were working long hours, 6 days a week, and it seems that work was an escape for you. And when you were consumed by your duties in the grocery store, you were unable to focus on the unbearable loss of Dana, and you need that. You can't focus
right.
on the unbearable loss because you go nuts. But your responsibilities seem to block out your pain, and I get that because I do the same
yeah,
thing.
And
I did it then, and I still do, and I keep overly busy with jobs and deadlines, and I often say I'm like the Energizer ostrich, which you probably have heard me say on many panels. I'm running around like crazy with my head in the sand. And can you talk about that time in your life when you just work, and maybe even after when Shelley was your wife,
yeah.
you still were working like crazy. So can you talk a little bit about that?
It's been a common thread throughout my life, really, with the you know adversity that I faced. You know, starting with my you know I had a big responsibility with the family business and. That couldn't just go away. And so, you know,
yeah.
my dad just, you know, he just continued to push me with work, but also allowed me to, you know, get out of there early on Saturday afternoons to get down to LA to, you know, with my friend Mike, go see Dodger games on Saturday
Dodgers,
evening and Sunday.
Yeah.
And yeah, just do stuff like that. And, you know, I look back now at how masterful my dad was with all that, you know, and it, I just continued, you know, through so much of my life has been the overachieving. And I learned from my dad, you know, the 10 to 13 hour, 14 hour days, 6 to 7 days a week. And it what drove me to the success I had in the, you know, in the grocery world and natural foods world after we sold our business and my folks retired. I, you know, rose to the top of the fastest growing startup grocery chain in America back in the, you know, 2004 range. And, but my anger, my intensity was one of my biggest strengths, but it also became one of my biggest downfalls. And, you know, so I got pushed mm-hmm. out of that based on, you know, just the way I was treating people back then, which I think, you know, the, mm-hmm. the me that everybody knows now, it's just hard for them to understand really how type A I was back then. And so anyway, so I, you know, had quite the struggles for after getting pushed out and, losing a lot of stock options, and then the company eventually sold to, I'll say the name, Sprouts, and millions of dollars would have been ours, you know, if I would have just towed the line and not been as big of a-hole as I was during those years. And so it really pushed me into some humility, self-reflection. You know, I got into a new business, mortgage business, and I just really thrived and succeeded. I put my work ethic to that, and then the market crashed. So then we, you know, you couldn't close a loan, so we went broke. I ended up having to do some jobs that were just, you would have never imagined at the, you know, we're at the height of where I was a grocery executive. And we ended up
yeah.
up in Jackson. We ended up in Jackson, and I was really reinventing myself, and the new me was starting to emerge. I found a hobby for the first time, real true hobby. Had a radio show called The Whole Enchilada with my son Dylan, and really starting to make some strides, but I still wasn't quite there. Well, then Shelley had her accident. And that's just, and I learned from her so much as far as not feeling sorry for yourself, just, you know, the determination and grit that it takes to make those positive steps every day. And that,
yeah.
you know, so, and there was so much, you know, and then again, I was working like crazy through those times, and I needed to lean on the kids. They were, you know, Taylor was 12, Dylan was 17 when Shelly had the accident. And they, you know, we all stepped up into new roles and really started to truly, understand and learn what life was all about. So this book kind of brings all that together. And
Yeah. I want to poke into that part where you said you had to take some jobs that you would never have believed that you had to take just to get by because of your because of all the difficulties with the financial, you know, parts of the country and everything
right.
in 2008 recession. And I really enjoyed the chapter about Mrs. Johnson. And it,
you know,
it
everybody kind of, does.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's funny. So I drove a cab, discount cab, which this was before Uber and Lyft, and there were these green cabs all over Phoenix. And I had a realtor friend that started doing it, and she told me, and I just jumped on it. And it was the most fascinating time of my life where I really learned what people were all about, that we were all basically
uh-huh.
the same, just needed to be respected, treated kindly, and listened to. And so
yeah.
it was funny because when I was doing that, I kept telling some people, I said, I'm going to write a book about all this, and I was laughing. And sure enough, you know, I think two of the best chapters probably in the book that so many people enjoy are those chapters. And it just really, you know, we didn't have anything at that time as far as finances go, and we had had so much. And I was like,
uh-huh.
you know what, I'm having fun with this, and this isn't nearly as bad as I would have thought it would have been if you would have told me 5 years ago, hey, look in this crystal ball, and this is what you're going to be doing. And
uh-huh.
it was like there's perspective. You know, you put things in perspective, and I had been through so much with Dana and then the – you know, the career, the loss of the high-powered career, and it's like, okay, you know, I've gotten through those things. I can get through this, and I'm
uh-huh.
it's not doesn't mean I'm always going to be on the bottom, you know. And so anyway, so I it became a competitive driving game of mine to see how much, you know, if I could make $200-$300 a night instead of $100 a night, and it just
uh-huh.
it did so much for me. And then at the same time, around that same time, I took a job as a manager. Well, right before the cab, I took a job for a few months, you know, because it's seasonal, as a store manager for
mm-hmm.
Spirit Halloween. And that would have been way below me. But it was so much fun because it was every aspect that I had done in the grocery business, but it was in a four-month period where you would hire,
mm-hmm.
you would stock the store, you would build the store. You know, you think about that. You wonder how that happens every year with the Halloween stores.
Yeah.
Well, it was, yeah. So then I built this team of just the coolest, quirkiest people that I just, and I took the fun side of my personality out, and I didn't have all the big ego anymore. And so that really built a foundation. And then I used that same, you know, build those same building blocks with the cab job. And then the next year I stepped away from the cab for a little while and took a job as a district manager for Spirit Halloween. And, you know, that gave me us enough money to at least eat for a little bit. And then I went back to the cab right after that season was over. But those are those toughest times, you know, and you don't see it at the time, but you know, those most trying, challenging moments are the things that really build and develop your strongest, your biggest strengths, you know, when you look back, when you can look back on it.
I
and that's
agree.
That's what happened. That's what happened there.
Yeah. At times, you know, when you were talking about Mrs. Johnson, you were talking about your vulnerability, and we often,
yeah.
I mean, many of us feel vulnerable often, and we often wear an invisible suit of armor, but when we peel back those layers of the armor, like an onion, we allow ourselves to become stronger. And I love what you wrote, and I'm quoting here. Reality is that we all struggle in some way or another, and that's so true. And the story that you told about Mrs. Johnson is you said you shared your story with her. Now, she also shared her story with you first, and I think that's what opened
right.
you up to share yours. And you said that you had felt different, more different than you had ever felt before. And that vulnerability lifted a weight that needed to be lifted a long time ago. So let it out. Allow your vulnerable side to show. Because when that happens, you become a real person. People can relate to you a whole lot more. They see that you, you know, it's, I know some of it sometimes, and I'm guilty of this too. I know I want everybody to think everything is going fine, that I am that strong person I talked about before, that I can handle everything. But when you ask for help, when you let other people know that, yeah, this is pretty darn hard, and yeah, I could use a little help. I think that you, by allowing that vulnerable side to show, you're unlocking the inner peace and freedom that you could have. And I that's what I got out of that chapter. And I was really, and you talked about it, and I think just now, and I think that was really interesting. And Bob, I'm watching the time now, and we only have a few more minutes. And I know we want to go into, I want you to be able to tell people where to find your book, but I also want you to address that one of the last issues the most recent issue, I guess, was your getting COVID and having to fight through that. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I've been working on this book for, you know, years, and got to the point 2 years ago, you know, 2 years ago this summer, where I was, had the first draft done and was with a copy editor, and she was, you know, really impressed with it and was giving suggestions, and I was going through all that, and I was just about finished with that, going back and forth, and in November of 2021, so I was, you know, in the mortgage business, had the best year of my life. Rates were great. I was back in a huge way, and we were, you know, thankful. We celebrated with taking my son, Dylan, he's a graphic designer, and he designed the cover of the book, and his girlfriend, and then our son, Taylor, our younger son, who did a lot of the pictures on my website, bobmilsap.com. Taylor, him and his girlfriend, Taylor lives in San Diego. We met over in San Diego. We rented an Airbnb on Sunset Cliffs right by the ocean, celebrated, had just the best Thanksgiving in years. And while we were there, we started getting the sniffles, all of us. And to make a long story short, by the following Friday, I had tested on Thursday night. I had just had COVID a few months earlier, so I didn't think it was COVID at first. But I had tested positive. The next day, went into the hospital, had a 73 oxygen level. Was really a high probability of dying.
Just for reference, you need to have about a 97 or 98, 95 is low.
Yeah.
Just
so
for reference,
I was
a 73.
They didn't think I was going to make it. Reading my medical records, they did not think I was going to make it. And I, you know, at one point I got all the way down to 50 later on during that fight. So I was hospitalized for 53 days. I, you know, it was a COVID time, so I had all kinds of people coming to my window to cheer me on, you know, because they couldn't come into my room. And I was just, it was like I was suffocating. I could not breathe. Hospitalized a total of 53 days, tried to go back to work, and was starting to see that I was having memory issues, forgetting to do things. My follow-through wasn't what, you know, all the things that I was so good professionally at, I was failing at. So I tell my doctor this, and he's like, well, you're trying to work? And I said, I'm trying, you know, and I was on oxygen at that point. And he's like, you know, You shouldn't be trying to work. I said, well, who's going to pay the bills? And he's like, well, don't you have long or short-term disability? And anyway, so I got a hold of HR, went out on leave, April of 2022. And so make that long story shorter, I'm now medically retired. I have a lot. I have like 11 doctors. I have a lot of the neurological issues that Shelley has. So in a lot of ways where she was my, you know, where I'm her caregiver, she's like looking after me for those same things. So we're getting through the best way we can. And my big concern when I was so sick was, people, you need to help Shelly, help Shelly, help Shelly. And Shelly never asked for help. And so I was like, I'm, you know, big, loud personality and trying to get people to help her. And they didn't understand what I was trying to say. And really, because it's an invisible injury, nobody realizes how bad it is for her and how hard that whole situation was. And she got COVID really badly, too, not to the point where she had hospitalized, but she was sick. So anyway, so that was all done after the book was written. So I guess I have a lot to write about in the future, but and I was, while I was so sick, I was just thinking, God, I got this beautiful book that has so much to share. I gotta survive for my family, and I gotta survive to get this darn book out.
Yeah.
So anyway, here I am, and you know, again, life changing situations just continue to, you know, every time I turn the corner, it seems like there's a new twist, two twists and turns.
Exactly.
So it'll be interesting to see how the next phase of life goes as I'm, you know, trying to find the purpose and adjustment of, you know, being medically retired at 56.
Yeah. Well, being medically retired, you are retired maybe from your mortgage and your grocery business, but I don't think you're retired from the writing another book.
Exactly.
So we're going to be looking forward to have
that
new book coming out. So get busy at 5 o'clock in the morning, Bob. And on that note,
right,
we do have to close down. So can you just quickly tell folks where they can find your book or learn more about you? I heard BobMilsap.com.
Yeah, So BobMilsap.com, my blog, 10,000 Days, it's just 10,000days.blog, but that feeds into my website, cool website that I'm proud of that I developed as the book came out, Bob Millsap, and that's with two L's, BobMillsap.com. My book is, you know, it's available on Amazon, it's available on Barnes & Noble, it's available org, which is a cool site that supports the local bookstore that you opt for when you set up an account. And so that sends some dollars their way, so that's cool. But, and it's just, like I said, it feels good to have it out, and it's still a little bit surreal to be having these conversations, but I'm just glad I'm able to turn my story into a positive and share the lessons that I've learned that can hopefully help others, you know, and it's seeming to do that, which feels good.
Well, I think you certainly have done that, Bob. So folks, check out Bob Millsap at BobMillsap.com and his new book, Take Yourself Free, Take Control of Your Life to Move Through the Pain. And, we talked a lot about the book, and there's a lot more in this book that you can get some value from. So, yeah, do that. So, Bob, I want to thank you very, very much for joining me tonight and sharing so much of your life and offering hope to other survivors and caregivers and just folks in general who are moving through pain of their own. And you can always learn more about Bob Millsap on, as I said, BobMillsap.com, or check out SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury.com and type in his last name in the search box to learn more. You can read interviews on my blog, SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury.com, of other TBI survivors and caregivers, and lots of information, brain injury resources, itty-bitty giant steps. And don't forget, check out my blog, my website at Donna Figurski, DonnaFigurski.com, to learn more about my book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale. And on my next show, here's where I have to go check out the calendar all the time. It will be a panel So, and that will be on, we've got 3 weeks between shows here. We're going to be on August 6th, and you'll be hearing about emotional changes after brain injury. And I believe Bob is a panelist with Deb Brandon on that show. August 6th, I will be able to talk to you again, Bob. So fun.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's
right. No, it wasn't. Yeah, it was August 6th. What?
Yeah.
Okay, good. And so remember to tune in the second and fourth Sundays of every month at 5:30 p.m. to listen to, that's 5 p.m. Pacific time, to listen to Lisa Dreyer. She is the host of Mess with MS. And also don't forget to stay tuned at 7 p.m. Moving Forward with Coach KJ and Dr. Valentina will be on the air very soon. So if you loved my show, tell 10 of your friends. If you hated it, well, tell 10 of your enemies. That works for me. So I'm going to see you all on August 6th, same time, same station, 5:30 p.m. Pacific time, and blogtalkradio.com. All right, so thanks again, Bob, very much. Give my love to Shelley, and good night, world.
Thank you, Donna.
You're welcome, Bob. So much. It's my pleasure.